Okay, so my name is Narina Lalafarian, and I'm an assistant professor of corporate law here in Cambridge Law Faculty. I'm also the co-director of the Center for Corporate and Commercial Law, and we call it shortly 3CL. It's my absolute pleasure to welcome you all to our first 3CL seminar of this academic year. As you may know, our center was formally launched in 1997, and it promotes research across the broad field of corporate law and commercial law. Each term, we organize various events, academic events, including events that are specifically tailored for our students. And this term is not an exception. We have five excellent events planned, and all of those are listed on the 3CL webpage and also circulated via faculty emails. I am especially delighted to kick off this year's seminar series on such a high note by introducing our distinguished speaker, Professor Mark Steinberg. Professor Steinberg holds the Rupert and Lillian Radford Chair in Law and is a professor at the SMU Dedman School of Law. Prior to his appointment as a Radford professor, he taught at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania, the University of Maryland, the George Washington University, and several other leading institutions. Mark's areas of expertise include business enterprise law, securities law, and also legal ethics. In addition to his extensive academic experience, Professor Steinberg has also served as an expert witness in various high-profile cases, including Enron, and he previously also worked as an enforcement attorney at the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. His scholarly footprint is substantial. He has authored around 50 books and 150 law review articles. Today, Mark will be speaking to us about his new book, Corporate Director and Officer Liability, Discretionaries, Not Fiduciaries, which was published this year by Oxford University Press. And the central thesis of the book is that corporate directors are discretionaries, not fiduciaries. And on that intriguing note, I'll now hand the floor over to Mark. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm delighted and honored to be here. It's really something to be at perhaps the premier law school in the world. This is my second time here. I spoke about a different book called Rethinking Securities Law exactly about 2 years ago today. So I'm honored to be back. I especially want to thank Professor Stefik and Professor Lalafarian for inviting me. It's great to be here. I'm having passed around a copy of my recent book. It was published in June by Oxford University Press. And how did this book come about? It was suggested I stay in one place, so I will not be walking around. So I'm here for the next 30 minutes. How did this book come about? Well, I've been teaching corporate law for longer than practically everyone in this room has been alive. It's been a while. And through the years, directors and officers are called fiduciaries. They've been called fiduciaries, after all, for centuries. But what I noticed as years went by, the liability standards have become more and more lax. So there I am teaching my students the fiduciary duty of loyalty. In the U.S., the fiduciary duty of care is also a fiduciary duty. I understand it is not here in England, the duty of care. And simply, the liability standards are so relaxed in most situations in the United States that I simply said to myself, this is simply not accurate to call these individuals fiduciaries, regardless whether one agrees or disagrees with the relatively permissive liability framework that exists in the United States. That's a separate issue from continuing to call these individuals fiduciaries. And what develops in the U.S. are what are standards of conduct and standards of liability. Standards of conduct generally states how directors and officers, how they should act. In other words, their best practices, their exhortations about the appropriate standard by which directors and officers should act. Standards of liability, however, are of course the standards that apply to determine whether directors and officers are to be held liable, normally monetarily liable for damages. And sometimes even preeminent courts conflate the two standards. And the U.S. Company law is principally state-based law. Delaware is the preeminent state for publicly held, publicly traded corporations. For these companies to list, they list in Delaware. But a couple of other states, Nevada and most notably Texas, where I live, have become very active competitors to Delaware, seeking even more permissive company law statutes. By the way, I should mention those of you who wish to earn a LLM in the United States, a Master's of Law, should consider SMU in Dallas. We have a very active international program. It's a much more relaxed lifestyle than New York. We have a wonderful university, beautiful campus. And Texas is, as you may know, the most prosperous state in the country right now. It's growing, and Dallas is home to the third largest number of publicly held corporations in the country right now. So it's a very much a growing city. But going back to my talk, this is a quote from the Delaware Supreme Court. I love this quote because it totally misinterprets the duty of care with respect to standards of conduct and standards of liability. The court says, and I quote, this is a decision that was issued a couple of years ago, predicated upon concepts of gross negligence, the duty of care requires that corporate fiduciaries inform themselves of material information before making a business decision and act prudently in carrying out their duties. So in other words, the court is saying the duty of care for liability purposes is premised upon gross negligence, which the Delaware courts define as basically reckless disregard, wanton neglect, but yet say to adhere to the duty of care, one must act prudently, which of course is very much similar to a fiduciary standard. So there you have the Delaware High Court conflating the standard of conduct and the standard of liability in a single sentence in a major decision. So a fiduciary, what does one generally look to? Who is a fiduciary, at least by U.S. standards? And in most of the world, I understand in England, I understand that the duty of care is not part of a fiduciary standard. It is a legal standard. In the U.S., though, generally a fiduciary standard means that the individual must act with reasonable care, in good faith, and with the loyalty is owed to those individuals to whom the duty is owed. And this has been recognized for centuries. And yet, with respect to liability standards, it often is not effective. Now, at times, fiduciary standards do apply. For example, if you have a related party transaction, as an example, a chief executive officer engages in a business transaction with the corporation, and that transaction is not approved by disinterested directors, is not approved by disinterested shareholders, in the U.S., the fairness test applies, that the burden is upon the chief executive officer, the person who benefited from that transaction, to show that the transaction is fair to the corporation, fair as to disclosure, fair as the corporation's need for the transaction, and fairest to price as examples. So at times, fiduciary standards do apply as far as liability is concerned, but more often they do not. Now, as I was thinking about a title for this book, I did not want a pejorative title. Because after all, if I came up with a pejorative title, then I think the book would lose its impact. So I was taking a walk one day, thinking about a proper title. I take a lot of walks, clears my head. And I came up with the term discretionaries, which is not in the English dictionary the way I mean it today. My hope is that it becomes a term in the English dictionary. And generally, it means that the liability standard changes as the facts and circumstances change. At times, a director has a very stringent standard of fiduciary duty, such as in an interested director transaction or related party transaction, which I just illustrated, is not approved by disinterested directors or disinterested shareholders. In other situations, the liability standard is very lax, whereby the discretion that a director officer has is very broad. So let me go through some examples. The duty of care. Duty of care generally refers to that a director officer must act as a reasonable person would be in like circumstances. What the Delaware courts say is that to hold a director or officer liable for breach of the duty of care requires deliberate disregard or reckless indifference to the best interests of the corporation. And I think that that is exemplified by the application of the business judgment rule, which I understand is applied here in the UK, but not with the tremendous discretion that exists in the United States. The doctrine developed over 100 years ago in the United States, the rationale was that judges are not business experts, and that with entrepreneurial decisions, managerial decisions, a court should not second-guess decisions made by directors. Generally, the standards for the business judgment rule in the U.S. is a deliberative decision, so a decision must be taken to act or not to act. The directors making that decision, they do not have a conflict of interest. They act adequately informed, and the decision has a rational basis. And in order for a shareholder or other type of plaintiff to overcome the presumption of the business judgment rule, the plaintiff must show that the directors acted with gross negligence, the same standard as with respect to the duty of care. Basically, willful disregard, reckless disregard for the interests of the corporation. And a Delaware vice chancellor, I really think, said it poignantly a couple years ago in a decision whereby he said that it is harder for a plaintiff to rebut the presumption of the business judgment rule than it is for a prosecutor to obtain a conviction for criminal negligence. So I'll just say that one more time, because when I say things sometimes that are just out of this world, people don't think that they hear me quite right. And that is, he said, Vice Chancellor Laster, and he gave me a nice quote on the back of the book, as did Professor Stefik. Thank you so much, Felix. I appreciate you doing that, needless to say. It is easier for a prosecutor to obtain a conviction based upon criminal negligence and have someone sent to prison than it is for a plaintiff to rebut the presumption of the business judgment rule. So how can we call these people fiduciaries? How in the world can we call these people fiduciaries where it's easier to send somebody to prison than it is for a plaintiff shareholder who feels like he or she has been injured, or the corporation has, to rebut that presumption? And then what's happened in the U.S., I'm just getting started here with the term discretionary, is that in a case called the Van Gorkum decision that was decided approximately 40 years ago, the Delaware Supreme Court held directors in a merger transaction to have breached the duty of care, that they acted with gross negligence, and were monetarily liable. The case was eventually settled for $23 million U.S. dollars. What happened in reaction to that is that companies threatened to reincorporate outside of Delaware. And Delaware felt that it had to act. So Delaware enacted the statute saying that if a corporation has a provision in its articles of incorporation called an exculpation provision, then a director can only be held liable, and today an officer can only be held liable in direct actions if a plaintiff is able to show intentional misconduct or a breach of the duty of loyalty. So in other words, even reckless misconduct in Delaware is not actionable by a shareholder. That is today the majority rule adopted by most of the states. But for some states, like Nevada and Texas, that statute is not permissive enough. For example, Texas this past summer has just adopted a statute which is self-enabling, So a publicly held corporation does not even have to have a provision in its articles. And what this statute says is that for a plaintiff to recover based upon a breach of the duty of loyalty or the breach of the duty of care for monetary damages, a plaintiff must first show a breach of that duty, and then secondly show that that breach was done with intentional misconduct, fraud, or a knowing violation of the law. So, for example, in Texas, a director officer cannot be held liable unless a plaintiff shows that he or she breached that fiduciary duty, and secondly, that that breach was intentionally done, was committed with fraud, or was a knowing violation of the law. And then Texas, not to outdo itself, adopted a further provision. I did speak to three Texas legislators on this, opposing this bill, and it quickly passed to show what kind of influence that I have. Meaning non-influence, of course, but I tried. I did give it a good faith effort, explaining to them why this bill was not good public policy. Texas has adopted a further statute to say that if a publicly held corporation adopts a bylaw, which can be adopted by the board, that in order for a shareholder to bring a derivative suit is an action that is brought on behalf of the corporation. And nearly all these causes of action based upon the duty of care and the duty of loyalty are derivative actions. What's a shorthand form of separating or distinguishing a direct from a derivative action is who is the party most directly harmed? Is it the corporation or is it the shareholder? So when we're talking about a related party transaction or excessive managerial compensation, the party most directly harmed, of course, is the corporation. And these are derivative causes of action. This statute says that if the board adopts a bylaw, it can prohibit any shareholder from bringing a cause of action unless that shareholder owns at least 3% of the company stock. For example, Tesla has reincorporated in Texas. Other than Mr. Musk, I'm unaware of any other shareholder that owns more than 3% of Tesla. So the result is that these suits cannot even be brought in Texas because no shareholder will own more than 3% of the stock. And yet we call these people fiduciaries. Kind of getting my drift? It's like, are you kidding me? These people are fiduciaries? You can only hold them liable if they engage in fraud, knowing misconduct, knowing violation of the law, and so on. And then the duty of good faith. Let's go back to Delaware law. The duty of good faith is basically, let's look at law compliance risk management policies, is that this is a core function of oversight with the board, that if it's in the sweet zone of law compliance, a company that manufactures ice cream to make sure that its plants that make ice cream, that they are sanitary and so on. Boeing, with respect to its problems, which we're all aware of, law compliance with respect to that, risk management to ensure that their standards are up to par. That is a core function of the board, and that's a standard of conduct. So the Delaware Supreme Court will say this is a core function of the board. Directors ought to engage in active oversight with respect to risk management, law compliance, and so on. What is the standard of liability in Delaware? And I quote, a plaintiff must prove that the directors, quote, utterly failed to implement any reporting or information system or controls, or having implemented such a system or controls, consciously failed to oversee its operations. So in other words, if the board does anything, adopt a system that is in place that is clearly inadequate, that doesn't hold them liable for breach of the duty of good faith. And if they do adopt that defective system and they do pay some attention to oversight, then again, they're not liable, even though their oversight or their framework is woefully inadequate. So that's another example of the standard of conduct
versus a standard of liability. And what about related party transactions? I said at the beginning of the talk that if, for example, a chief executive officer engages in a transaction with a corporation, it's not approved by disinterested directors, it's not approved by disinterested shares, the burden is upon the CEO to show the fairness of the transaction. This generally would only occur in privately held companies. What happens in publicly held companies normally is that the disinterested outside directors look at the transaction and they approve the transaction. What is the result of that? The result of that in most states is that the business judgment rule is the applicable standard. In other words, that transaction cannot be challenged unless the plaintiff shows that those disinterested directors acted with gross negligence. Again, reckless disregard, wanton disregard for the best interests of the corporation. And the standard for disinterestedness or independence as held by the courts is extremely broad. For example, in the Zuckerberg case, in that situation, the CEO put on the board his mentor and good friend. Mark Zuckerberg put on the board his mentor and good friend, and the Delaware Supreme Court said, without showing more, that does not even raise a reasonable doubt of lack of independence. Not even a reasonable doubt. And in the U.S., a reasonable doubt means that there's no more than a 5% uncertainty. So that the plaintiffs were not able to show even to a 5% possibility that this individual, who was Mr. Zuckerberg's mentor for decades and was his good friend, was not independent. So we have the structural bias situation going on. But how much longer do I have?
5 minutes.
5 minutes. Okay. So these are a few examples. Let me give you one more before I go on, and that is the corporate opportunity doctrine. And that is that a director and officer cannot properly take an opportunity that properly belongs to the corporation without receiving the approval of disinterested directors and so on. Nonetheless, in Delaware and 15 other states, these states have adopted statutes which permit directors, by passing bylaws, to permit their fellow directors and officers to take corporate opportunities. So that totally bypasses that duty that would otherwise be owed. So I think these are sufficient illustrations. The next issue, of course, so what? You know, why does it matter? Why does it matter? Directors and officers have been called fiduciaries for centuries. People generally know what the situation is. Why don't we call them fiduciaries and continue them to do so? Well, I've got three responses. One is, which you probably learned the first day of law school and probably learned way before then in your childhood, is the law should be truthful. That principles should basically represent what the law is. And here, they do not. We call these people fiduciaries, which generally mean these individuals must act with reasonable care, good faith, duty of loyalty, and yet, when it comes to whether they are going to be held responsible for their conduct, these standards frequently are utterly lacking. So therefore, the law is not truthful to call these individuals fiduciaries. Secondly, a principle should correspond to the characteristics for which it is identified. So again, this is similar to the first principle, and that is that we call these people fiduciaries. We expect certain characteristics to be associated with someone who is a fiduciary. And that is, of course, that the person is watching out for my best interests. If somebody owes me a fiduciary duty, that person is watching out for my best interests. He or she is acting in good faith with respect to acting in my best interest, and that he or she is acting with reasonable care in undertaking this endeavor. And that's simply not what the law is with respect to liability. And then the third is we really have to consider here uninitiated investors, your typical retail investor. And that is that the person who hasn't gone to university, law school, and even the individuals who have gone to university who are not trained in the law, that they hear jargon of directors and officers being held fiduciaries, they reasonably believe that these people are held to significant standards of liability. And in fact, they're not. So this perpetuates the perception that these individuals are treated in a favored and an unfair manner, talking about directors and officers, and that the law is conveying a false portrayal, which I think is unacceptable to the rule of law. And that therefore, that the continued identification of these individuals as fiduciaries is simply not meritorious. So let me end with this quote from my book. It's not a long quote, although you may think it is. Legal terms and concepts have impact. They are relied upon for what they claim to represent. In the corporate setting, fiduciary status presents the image that directors and officers are to act with reasonable care, in good faith, and with loyalty. And the failure to so act will give rise to enforceable remedial measures. In actuality, this is not the situation. Rather than engage in fiction, the status of these individuals should be characterized in an accurate and neutral manner. This portrayal should define corporate directors and officers as discretionaries and thereby accurately reflect their status. So I'm pleased to take any questions. Again, thank you very much for having me here. Thank you. Thank you.